You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 72, Janeway Goes Goth. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the TNG Blu-ray price drop, the winter 2012 issue of Star Trek magazine, little Starfleet uniforms for your feet, the latest entries in IDW's Hive and ongoing series, and we play with the new Chateauetry app. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt and Matthew Rushing to discuss Bride of Chaotica. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I am doing wonderfully. I actually decided not to defect to Russia after all, and in fact, to come back to the Ready Room this week after being gone. I know you guys missed me. I was gone for, what, a week and a half?
Well, I'm glad that you have reversed the sex change, because I was really caught off guard last week by all that. And
You were caught off guard. I was extremely caught off guard when I started listening to news. I didn't know what was going on.
I hope you also enjoyed the previous week, our little love letter to you at the beginning of the feature with Michael and Ben.
I definitely did, yes. I believe I missed being on the show as much as you guys missed having me there. Although one and a half solid shows without me, I think the Ready Room survived in my absence, but I'm never going to let that happen again.
I think we did. Now, I'm glad to see you back in your own home again, because, you know, you went from the airport in Los Angeles to the airport in Seattle and apparently directly to a Jonathan Coulton performance. I don't even know what day you finally went back to your home.
I'm not sure either. Well, it was Jonathan Coulton, John Roderick, Merlin Mann, John Hodgman, Scott Simpson, who some people might know. It was like this huge like Twitter podcaster extravaganza. And because of Hurricane Sandy, my flight got changed, so I was able to make it. But yes, I arrived just in time to make it to this show. I think I got home somewhere around 2 a.m., and my sleep schedule is still not back to normal. But yeah, I kept trying to find successive events to go to, and I eventually ran out of them.
That photo you tweeted of yourself last night, well, you look pretty wasted. I think I said you look like you just finished day 39 of Survivor. I don't know what you're doing this week. Oh, goodness. But anyway, yeah. We're back here now. You're back from the Breen homeworld, and we're ready to do the Ready Room. And actually, Greg, there was so much excitement this week. You've literally been back in the States for less than a week now, and we launched a new show. Which we weren't even planning to do, and it just kind of happened on Wednesday.
No kidding. Yeah, Wednesday, the Star Wars Disney news hit, and I basically said, I have to start talking out loud about this, and it probably makes more sense for me to talk to other people than just blab by myself in my apartment, you know, to no one. So I got some people together, and we were talking, and then I realized, well, we should probably record this, and then we should probably put it somewhere. And then I talked to you, and you said, well, we can put it on Trek FM. And yeah, somewhere in the space of 48 hours, we had a complete podcast all ready to go. from complete, not even thought of doing it, conception, to ready to go.
I don't know. I still think we're crazy, but we did it.
Yeah, and I already have the next 2 weeks of shows booked, so I think this is the thing. So it's the Observation Lounge. And basically what happened was there's another new show from Trek FM, To the Journey, that I'm sure we'll talk about momentarily. But I couldn't let them have the glory of being the new show on Trek FM. So basically anytime you launch another new show, Chris, I will be right there at its heels.
I think so. Yeah, you just... they got to be the new show for, like you said, about 48 hours.
About
and then. And then here you come, Greg Harbin.
Yeah, so look forward to my Battlestar Galactica podcast that I'll be starting.
So say we all.
Right.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time.
Oh, goodness.
I will be starting a Boy Meets World sequel show, podcast network, that I'll be bringing to Trek FM if need be.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and jump into news before we get too deep into this this conversation. So, a lot of things have happened over the past week, and finally for me, one thing that I have been waiting for, I've been leading the charge, I have been determined that Amazon.com was going to lower the price of TNG Season 2 on Blu-ray, and sure enough, it has happened.
Well, as they say, Chris, only Nixon could go to China. So I'm wondering, when did you visit the Amazon.com headquarters here in Seattle? And what did you have to do to convince them to lower the price?
Well, you know, you weren't the only one with a secret away mission happening last week, Gregory Harbin. And as for what I had to do, that's, you know, that's confidential. I don't like to talk about those things,
okay.
But it worked. And the price is now down to $79.99. And I have placed my pre-order. So come first week of December, I will have Season 2 on Blu-ray in my hands here in the Tokyo Trek FM studio. And Best Buy has also come on board and matched Amazon, so they are at $79.99 as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's good to hear. I hear Walmart is still holding out. I guess you haven't shown up with a Batleth yet to their headquarters, but I'm sure they'll lower their price. I think $79.99 is reasonable. I will order it for that price for sure. Although I still haven't finished my TNG season one set, I should probably plan on doing that before this new set comes out.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I need to do that as well. And yeah, Walmart, they're still at $114.86. Now you know it's 86 because for some reason Walmart loves ending their prices in 86.
They do. I don't know what that's about.
I don't know if it's some kind of fetish. I don't know what it is. Maybe I should do a little research on that and find out. But whatever the reason, that seems to be a common price with them. Yeah. I'm sure they'll come down too as well. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me to see Walmart come down to say 69 and push the other guys down before all is said and done. I'm hoping the price does come down more because the good thing about Amazon pre-orders is that if the price comes down before the release date, they will give you whatever the lowest price is. So,
right, yeah,
I'm hoping that that is the case.
Yeah, that is quite nice. Yeah, I did want to mention you talked with Char last week about the they're actually doing another event. We speculated on whether they're doing another theater event, and they are showing Measure of a Man and Q-Who, and we will be doing another Seattle Trek FM meetup on that day. So if anybody in the Seattle area wants to tweet Trek FM or Greg Harbin, let me know you want to come by. We'll let you know what theater we're going to. Obviously, it's going to be the same time for everybody, but we're probably going to have a meetup too beforehand at a bar, and we'd love to have you come by, even if you have to buy a ticket all the way from Russia.
Yeah, I was going to say there, I think, don't you have someone you're supposed to ask out on a date for this event?
However far you have to come, even if it's exactly 12 hours away from us because it's the other side of the world, you're probably the one I actually most want to come. So go ahead and send me a message on Twitter so that I know you're interested.
This is how we ask people out in 2012, right?
It is. It is 2012. Everything happens on Twitter.
Should be their slogan. Boy, I tell you, those guys running Twitter, they just don't get it.
Oh, they don't. They don't at all.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to getting my set. I'm sad I won't be able to join you guys for the theatrical event, but I hope, again, that a lot of our listeners will turn out from the area there and join you, Greg. All right. So, Greg, moving on. Finally, Star Trek the magazine has been released. And, you know, I used to look forward to this publication every single month for years and years. And now that it's gone quarterly, I feel like ages go by before the next issue comes out. And we talked about two shows ago, I believe it was, the collector's edition cover that was available at Star Trek in the convention in London. And that publication itself is now out on the newsstand in the US and on digital. And I have a copy right here. And I thought we might run through the contents a little bit.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to hearing what's in this one. I have yet to to pick it up. But it looks like there's some really interesting stuff, including an interview with Jeffrey Combs, who I really love to see as Brunt in Star Trek Enterprise.
He's everywhere. You never know which character he is or which series he's on. And,
yes.
And you know, we have this game before we get mail about not knowing which character is on which series. It's just a game we have. You know, you can interchange Jeffrey Combs' characters and series.
Oh, yeah. It barely even matters. I mean, it's Jeffrey Combs there. It doesn't matter if in a particular episode he's playing Brunt or Weyoun or Shran or Tosk. Or Surak.
Zial, don't forget.
Zial.
He was the fourth Zial.
Yes. Or the female changeling. I mean, he has such a wide range that, as long as he shows up, I'm happy.
I have to say, though, I think that his biggest stretch was when he played the Federation president in Star Trek IV.
That was a bit of a stretch. I was a bit surprised to see him there.
I barely recognized him.
Very true.
So, yeah, there is that interview. There is a previously unpublished interview with Robert Justman called Giving the Wagon Its Wheels, mm-hmm. Looking back at the original series. There's an interview with Kate Mulgrew. There's one with Alice Krieger. There are features on Star Trek Online. There's one kind of interesting, if you like collectibles, there's a feature called Busted! And it's a behind-the-scenes look at Design Works, and these are the guys that make the Maxi Bust collectibles for Titans. And I'm glad that they were careful about how they wrote this headline, because when I first read it, I thought it said, Creators of Titan Busts. And it's like, guys, like, you really need to edit. But it was okay in the end.
Okay.
But what else is there? There is, for comic fans, there is a feature called Four Color Flashback. And they're looking at the comics, and Chris Dowles explains how he came to pen the origin of the Borg, which could be interesting for many.
Yeah, I don't really consider the comics extremely canon, but it is an interesting side of Star Trek, especially since it is visual. You know, it's similar to the movies and TV shows in which you can really look at it and see. So there's a lot of design work that has to go into it. And I mean, the people who work on it are definitely putting their heart and soul into what comes out. So this would be an interesting feature to read as well.
Definitely so. And so, Greg, if you want to take a peek here, I'm holding up for you a page from a feature called Lonesome Planetoid Guide Hottest Vacation Spots in the Alpha Quadrant.
Oh, very nice.
Now, they have a bunch of lists here. They have the Seven Wonders of the Galaxy. Tell me what you think about these. The Bajoran Wormhole. The Dyson Sphere. The Nexus. The Guardian of Forever.
So far, none of these are places I terribly want to go.
Right. These aren't places you want to go. These are the seven wonders. It's kind of like the seven wonders of the world. These are the seven wonders of the galaxy.
Okay, so it's not like they're saying if you want to go on a honeymoon, maybe you should check out the Guardian of Forever or the Dyson Sphere. They're just saying they are quite impressive, and you should see them at some point in your life.
Right. I mean, you might want to take the Dyson Sphere with you on your honeymoon, but it's probably not the best destination.
I see.
But number five is, when you consider the first four, they have Starfleet headquarters as one of these seven wonders of the galaxy.
A building? A large building with windows and chairs.
I guess so. I could just see the Klingons sitting around the dinner table with Kirk talking about the human arrogance of this list.
I can just imagine like a group of Asian tourists posing in front of Starfleet headquarters and taking a picture. That's what I'm picturing right now.
That would be great. So they have more lists. There's that one. They have the top five best bars to get a Romulan ale. And this is the other one I wanted to run by you. Tell me what you think. They have the three best spots for nightlife in the Alpha Quadrant.
Best spots for nightlife. Okay.
Right. Now there's Wrigley's Pleasure Planet, which, as you know, was prominently featured in gum commercials for several decades in the U.S.
Right.
Everyone on Wrigley's pleasure planet is a twin and apparently extremely good looking. And all they all have fresh breath.
I think you're getting your gum brands mixed up, but okay. Is the Orbitz lady there? Because if the Orbitz lady is there, I'm in.
No, no, Greg. This is Wrigley's double mint gum. Come on. All right. So, also for best nightlife, Ferenginar.
Ferenginar.
But doesn't it rain continuously?
It does. Well, I don't know. I guess if you're inside, I guess they probably have a lot of really good Tongo casinos that you can go and get Ferengied out of all of your money. I would assume that they are really good at casinos there.
Yeah, I guess so. And then the other one is Cardassia Prime.
Okay, so what's so great about Cardassia Prime?
I don't know. It doesn't seem to me like Cardassia Prime would be a place I would want to go for nightlife. But they say that it's favored by entertainers and artists, that it's great to indulge in public displays of music and dance. So I don't know if this is, you know...
Just because Ducat goes on in some crazy ramble speech about how wonderful Cardassia Prime is and how it's full of artists and musicians and the finest blah, blah, blah. That doesn't mean that we need to take it at face value. I'm pretty sure Cardassia Prime is a horrible hellhole of a planet. The worst of Big Brother dictatorships that you've ever seen. So maybe steer clear.
Yeah, probably is. It's probably like, believe it or not, this is actually going on in Tokyo now. The police have decided that they are going to attempt to enforce some obscure law that it is illegal to dance after midnight. So there are actually signs on clubs around Roppongi that say, please do not dance.
Oh my goodness.
And yes. And I said they will try to enforce it because there was one sign that said, please do not dance. People brought a mannequin, put it next to the sign and put a no dance, no life sign on it. So I don't think they're going to have much success. But on Cardassia, you know, if they say don't dance, I'd advise you not to dance.
That's quite true. They can make you disappear very easily.
Absolutely. Although I think I do know one person who might really enjoy hanging out in the nightlife on Cardassia with Gold Ducat and a bottle of Canard.
Very possibly, but we don't need to talk about that.
All right, so this magazine is available. Beautifully designed, as always, Star Trek, the magazine. And it's available. The iPad app is how I read it. It's fantastic. It looks beautiful on the iPad. And you don't have to search for it on the newsstand. And I don't know how much it is in the States. Probably about $9.99, I think.
That sounds about like right, that. When I've looked at it. Mm-hmm.
I think it's about 850 yen, or 800 yen. So I recommend everyone grab the magazine. It looks beautiful. So Greg, let's move on. And, you know, I saw this news story and it just reminded me of a line from one of my favorite They Might Be Giants songs.
And which line is that?
Someone in a club tonight has stolen my ideas.
Is this about the Star Trek socks from ThinkGeek, Chris?
It absolutely is. Now, listeners will remember a few months back, we redesigned Starfleet uniforms. And Greg, what was our solution to indicating which division you're in?
I know, we were going to put it on the socks. So you just had to roll up your pant leg and everybody could see. I thought it was an ingenious solution, elegant, yet flexible. Machine washable, and it seems like ThinkGeek agrees with us, and I'm assuming you did get an email from them requesting a license for our brilliant idea.
Oh yeah, of course, absolutely.
So I'm expecting those residual checks to start flowing in, a nickel off of every copy, just like Larry Nemechek gets a nickel every time someone loads up Memory Alpha. We're also going to be getting several nickels every time somebody buys some of these socks, which are really excellent. They've got them in command colors, command science, and Security, so you can have whatever, you know, whichever division you're in, I guess.
Yeah, it is nice here that they do give you all three division colors in one set, so you don't have to order, you know, three separate. You don't have to pay $24.99 three times just to get your science, command, and engineering here. I don't know, the socks, I mean, they look great. I think to really show them off, you should probably wear them with shorts and sandals, maybe, which would be just an awesome look that, you know, all the girls will absolutely love.
Sandals, please, please not socks with sandals. You lost me there. Shorts, jorts, you know, skirts and scants, all of these things are acceptable. Pretty much anything that shows off your ankles is going to be a really good choice for showing off these socks.
I'm picturing the old Saturday Night Live sketch when Patrick Stewart hosted and they did Love Boat, The Next Generation. And they had the Next Generation uniforms combined with the Love Boat uniforms. So they had the white shorts. I think this would be awesome if they did the original series Love Boat. They could actually have kind of an all-white sailor's outfit, but they would have these Think Geek socks on to indicate their division.
You know, I've already heard people say that they're having trouble with Star Trek Enterprise, like figuring out what rank people are because the pips are kind of small and bunched together on the chest. Be great if, yes, everyone was wearing the exact same thing on the ship, just this white suit from head to toe, except every once in a while the camera will go down to their ankles so that you know what rank they are and which division they're in, just to keep you, make sure that you know what's going on.
Right. And see, they should do it this way. The color of the socks indicates the division. Of course, the insignia also indicates the division in TOS. Rank, in lieu of pips, it depends on how many toes you have in the socks. So an admiral has 5 toes, a captain has 4. Ensign has the, you know, the Japanese style socks that have just the big toe and then all the others are covered. Right. And Chief O'Brien just has kind of like booties on, you know, there are no toes if you're not an enlisted man.
So I'm thinking that really dramatic shot of Kirk, you know, in Star Trek II, where he enters the room and there's that light behind him and he's sort of in silhouette. In this version, the camera will start at his feet and show his beautiful sandals and socks with the showing the 4 toes before slowly panning up the rest of his body.
Exactly. Okay, well, I think we've spent enough time on this little socks story here. So if anyone's interested, go over to thinkgeek.com. You'll find these there. Trek socks, they're $24.99. And not to worry, they're machine washable.
Yes.
Okay, Greg, what do we have up next in news today?
Well, up next in news, we have what is probably the most exciting thing to happen to the Apple world since the introduction of the iPhone. No, I'm not talking about the iPad mini. I'm talking about the Chateauetry app that has recently been released on the Apple iTunes store.
This is an interesting app. Now, in the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
We spent, I don't know, about 15 minutes playing with this app, and we decided that maybe, I even tweeted this, this week's Ready Room is apparently just you and me playing with Chateauetry. We came up with a few things as well.
We did. We've had a few. I think you have a really good one that you were going to play for us. Just to give people an idea, basically, they've had William Shatner record himself saying like 500 words. And now you can put them together sort of like, you know, magnet poetry that you can have on your refrigerator and you just put words up. This is exactly that, except at the end of it, when you push a button, when you push the Shat That button, William Shatner speaks. Now, what do you have William Shatner saying for us, Chris?
Well, I tried to play around with a few. Now, of course, I wanted to do a barrel roll.
Do a barrel roll! The barrel roll! Prestige or
of course.
But barrel is not one of the words that he recorded for some reason. I have no idea. I'm waiting for the Burtonoetry app because you know that LeVar Burton is going to record barrel and roll, but
absolutely.
Anyway, so I had to play around with a few things. You know, I need to do some work on it, but my first one is,
do a ragged robot.
That's almost do a barrel roll. That's almost.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like a barrel roll. It's kind of, it's like Shatner's overacting. It's kind of like the mutiny twirl that he does in Turnabout Intruder in the corridor.
Yeah, something like that. I've got a pretty good one.
Shut that.
He laughed a wonderful, cruel adventure time.
That gives you an idea of what you can put together with this app.
So this is a really cool app. It's a little bit tricky to use because you get a list of words at the bottom and you have to drag them up, or you can use a find function to search the dictionary. But of course, Shatner had to actually record all the words that are in the app, and he didn't record the entire unabridged English dictionary. And mysteriously, Greg, he did not record the word star or the word trek.
Right. and so I was going to do, you know, I was going to do Star Trek Into Darkness, but then I couldn't do star, I couldn't do trek. Well, I thought, okay, well, I'll do Space Adventure Into Darkness. It doesn't even have space. Doesn't even have space in here.
Right. You know, actually, I think it does have star. I was wrong. It doesn't have space.
Okay.
That's the one. And it doesn't have trek.
Right. Right. So I could do star space, but I can't do the word trek or the word or star adventure, I guess I could do.
Maybe. Yeah. So I was putting together a sentence, and the lack of a word here leads me to this little contest I thought we would do here. I started this sentence, and what we'd like is for listeners to send us a word to complete the sentence. So tell us, how would you complete the following sentence?
Shut that.
Star beings trembled when I...
When I did what?
When I dot, 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 ellipsis.
That's right. Let us know what Captain Kirk did that caused star beings to tremble.
All right. I can't wait to hear what people write in to tell us to this. That's going to be good.
And you can just tweet us. That's probably the easiest way to handle this one because it's so short. Just tweet us at Trek FM and
right.
Let us know.
You know, who I really hope gets back to us on this is Brandon Braga, who I was recently talking to about this. Well, you know, Brandon Braga's recently joined Twitter. So I said, I'll go ahead and talk to him. And you know, the most important thing to ask Brandon Braga is, of course, about the ending to Generations. Because,
right.
You know, I want to ask Ronald Morris, want to ask Brandon Braga. And I have a quote here about the original ending to Generations, which I love deeply. He said, quote, "The original ending sucked." So he was not happy at all with the way that Captain Kirk went out. So maybe that was the world trembled when I died at the ending of Star Trek Generations in the original cut. That's what I'm thinking.
The end was not funny.
Well, it seems like Shatner himself didn't like the ending either, Greg. So,
so that's what it sounds like. Well, that's good to know.
But anyway, it's great that you were able to get that information through your exclusive interview with Brandon Braga over the Twitters.
Chris, we just got an app reply from the Chateauitry app while doing the Ready Room.
Because I tweeted that the whole show is going to be us playing with the app.
Right.
So Chateauitry here replied to us and said, "Have fun. Will you be using the pass-around mode?"
So I guess that would be the idea where one person would put in a word, then you pass it to the next person, they put in a word, pass it back.
Right, which would be an awesome party game and something that we will have to do in a slightly inebriated state at Star Trek Las Vegas, I'm sure, next
summer.
Definitely.
Can we get like we're doing a game of telephone, can we get like 20 of us in a circle and just pass it from one end all the way down to the other, and then we play it at the end?
Definitely. We're going to do it. Absolutely. So go ahead, everyone. Make your plans now. Star Trek Las Vegas, Chateauitry, pass-around mode at the Rio with Trek FM.
And I think it's something like $199, $299.
It's $299, yeah.
It's $299. So it's a little much, but considering the amount of fun that you and I have already had with it, I think it's well worth it. Skip a latte tomorrow. Buy Chateauitry.
I think I already got my money's worth out of it today. So yeah, I see. Go ahead and spring $3 for a Chateau Witry.
There you go.
Really fun. Okay, so Greg, let's move on to the next story. And as everyone knows, you and I actually quite enjoy the comics. And IDW has released now the 14th issue of Star Trek Ongoing, as well as the second issue of Hive, which yes. I told you, you should have spent your time during your exclusive interview with Brandon Braga asking him about Hive, but instead you're focused on your obsession with the ending of Generations, as always.
Well, it's much more interesting, I think, the ending of Generations than Hive might be so far. Although, actually, this issue is kind of interesting. I don't know if you've had a chance to look through it, but it's mostly set in present day, and well, not present day, you know, present day for the Picard we know and love. The action's heating up. There's this war. Worf goes in and starts fighting these Species 8472 knockoffs. It's actually, this issue is kind of really cool. There's a few moments that are a little odd. There may or may not be a Seven of Nine in a giant spider suit. I think we've revealed one of Brandon Braga's fetishes that I don't think ever needed to be revealed to the world. But that moment aside, I'm kind of excited. I like where this Hive thing is going.
So we're revealing all kind of fetishes. This is like, as you sent me an iMessage the other day as you were watching Deep Space Nine, apparently Ira Stephen Bear has a brushing fetish because the O'Brien girls never stop brushing their hair.
They never stop. They don't. They just don't. We really need to talk about this episode where Molly falls through a time portal and comes out a completely different... I don't even know what the word is. She goes in Japanese, comes out Chinese. That's all I'm going to say. I don't know how it happened. Maybe the same way that Miles married a Japanese woman, but she's actually Chinese. Yes. But they're also, in addition to this, they're always brushing their hair.
This was your iMessage to me, quote from Miles. Every time I look at her, I see a little more the girl that she was. And then Greg says, she's Chinese now, in all capital letters.
Right. It's like, you know, you don't talk to your son for a few years, and then you come back, and he's an Andorian now. It's like, I think you probably notice a difference, and you're going to mention it at some point.
I know. I know these things don't bother most people, I guess. But for me living in Japan, and Greg lived in Japan, this kind of... The way that American television just groups all Asians as generic Asians is kind of annoying. But anyway,
really that's completely beside the point of this comic, where again, Locutus is fighting Locutus and this Borgified Data are fighting Arachnid Seven of Nine. So if you're a fan of really crazy over the top plots, Hive is really for you. I'm looking forward to hearing from Brandon. Where his thoughts were going into Hive, what exactly he's trying to do here, because it's kind of, you know, like the 70s had those exploitation films where it's just, let's see how crazy and messed up we can get. I feel like this is kind of a Borg exploitation film.
That sounds about right to me. Yeah.
Borg-sploitation.
Okay, so the other one that is out is Ongoing number 14, which, you know, we've been accustomed with these to getting original series episodes being retold in the Abramsverse, or we've been getting new material that's, you know, kind of loosely related to TOS or based on the 2009 movie. However, right. We have something different in this one, and it's something that I believe delighted you to no end.
Yes, use the word different. Yes, it's... Oh, goodness. This Star Trek Ongoing 14, I think, is the threshold of Star Trek Ongoing. I don't know what they were thinking. It is the Kienzer origin story. And as Sci-Fi Commons at replied me, who?
I think that's what most people would say if you said Kienzer.
Yes.
Because, and I thought you might actually like this issue because I have not met anyone other than you who is so excited about Kienzer and talks about Kienzer so much and is so happy every time Kienzer shows up in a scene. And I'm being serious here. I really like Kienzer.
I do like Kienzer. I think Kienzer is cool. I like Deep Roy, the actor who plays Kienzer. I like that they gave Scotty a buddy, you know. But this comic is a mess. For one thing, it starts having him talk. But only he has this thing where he only says one word at a time, which I guess is probably going to be a joke in the next film. You know, one of those ongoing jokes where he only says one word at a time. But I really don't need to see Kienzer's home world, find out that he's actually a giant on Kienzer world. I don't need to see him like bullied as a child. This is not interesting, guys.
Yeah, it was... I don't know. I don't have a real problem with them telling the Kienzer backstory, but it was kind of odd as a comic that after everything we've gotten up to this point, it's like suddenly, oh, here's how Kienzer met Scotty, and just like Spock, you know, he's bullied as a child. And I guess we shouldn't give away too much about this one, but there really isn't a lot to give away.
Yeah, spoilers. He meets Scotty. Although it's more than that. I really don't want to give away the big spoiler, but hopefully we will be able to cover it. Spoiled on a future show. But it has a really bizarre thing that happens about midway through the issue. Something that's just completely unbelievable. And it basically made me tune out. And it's like, this is ridiculous at this point. And you're just making stuff up.
So if you want to check them out, they are available now, of course, in your comic shops or through the iPad, iPhone app. Do they make that app for Android, Greg? I don't even know.
I don't think so, but someone could write us in and tell me that I'm wrong.
Right. Yeah, I don't think so either, but I'm not sure. I know they don't make the Star Trek magazine app for Android because people are posting in the comments on StarTrek.com. Make Star Trek magazine available on Android. And I'm thinking, guys, StarTrek.com does not publish the magazine. You need to write to Titan Publications and tell them that you want to have digital Star Trek magazine on your Android device. And maybe they'll listen. All right. So, but these are available for $3.99. And as usual, they run 32 pages. Okay, Greg, what do we have up next today in news?
Well, we have another poll from StarTrek.com. I'd like to cover these at least, you know, briefly and see exactly what they asked and what was answered. This week's poll was, which Star Trek series had the best music? And, of course, you might say TOS, you know, with the bum, 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 you know, all of that exciting fight music. Even if it was reused quite a bit, it still was really good music. And I don't know how anyone could say anything other than TOS, but who won this poll, Chris?
Well, this is interesting to me. Overwhelmingly, with 35% of the vote, Voyager came out as the winner in this poll. I say it's interesting to me because essentially almost every poll that StarTrek.com does recently is won by Voyager.
Yes.
And I feel like, again, it's nothing against Voyager. I feel like we are in a period of time right now where the fans who are most active in voting in these polls are people who are of the age that Voyager was their first series, and to them, Star Trek is Voyager, and all the other stuff is the stuff that came before Voyager.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I just think that the poll results are a little bit skewed by the demographic right now.
Yeah, I mean, who can forget that poignant Kes's theme that was played frequently during early episodes of the show? And then, of course, the Kim's clarinet solo, Opus in Delta Quadrant. I can't think of any Voyager music aside from the opening opening titles, which, granted, that is a great piece of music, one of the first pieces I learned when I learned piano. Other than that, I don't remember particularly the, you know, in-episode music, whereas on, you know, the original series, on DS9, even TNG and Enterprise, I remember that music. And I remember liking quite a bit of it. I can't tell you what Voyager did at this point.
I think for me, the Voyager theme, of course, is beautiful. It's very well written, very well done. The other piece of music from Voyager that stands out to me is from Bride of Chaotica, which we're going to talk about in the feature today. Mm. That was a very distinctive score.
That's true.
Otherwise, you know, I mean, Voyager had great music. It did its job of setting the atmosphere for the action and the dialogue that was taking place mm-hmm. on top of it. But I feel like for the most part, you know, TNG, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise, the music, it all kind of runs together for me. There was a certain style, there was some variation, but it was very much, you know, the television, the background music style.
Right. I mean, it's nothing like, say, Doctor Who that I've been watching. Allons-y! It really has distinctive music. It has, like, distinctive themes for each character. There's, like, a strong Doctor's theme that appears in the fifth season that plays, you know, every few episodes. You know, when the Doctor does something extra heroic, they're playing this theme and it gets you excited. That doesn't really happen in Voyager. It's more of a standard, or in Star Trek in general. It's more of a standard, just move you forward, you know, tell you where the act breaks are, tell you when you should be, thinking about what's going on here. But there's nothing strong, nothing that's really saying, oh yes, here's that Rain Robinson theme that they've been building on. No, it's just your typical, you know, chords played over what's going on screen.
Yeah, I think so. And the original series, if I were going to vote here, because the poll is about which had the best music, not the best theme, I would probably have to vote for the original series. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, there was less original music in the original series than there was in The Next Generation. But the music that was written has so much character to it, and it's really brilliant, and it's stuff that sticks with you. You know, the Menagerie, Alexander Courage's Menagerie theme is mm-hmm. amazing. Amazing piece of music. And you mentioned, you know, the fight theme from Amok Time. There's so much stuff in the original series that has become truly iconic and has transcended Star Trek itself. And there really isn't anything in any of the other series that has actually transcended the franchise in that way.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And so it'd be interesting to see going forward how these polls continue to be influenced by Voyager. I do see that there's the which TNG actor would be best to take over the captain seat from Picard. So far, there's no Voyager actors in the lead for that, but that's because they weren't included. So maybe that's the only way to get around Voyager winning these polls.
Probably. Is there an other? Everyone's going to write in Tuvok.
Right, of course. Yes, you know. Tuvok. Best choice for captain.
I don't know. Okay, well, this was interesting. But yeah, if you want to share your thoughts on Star Trek music, write to us. trek.fm/contact or, you know, tweet us. Trek.fm on Twitter.
The Adventures of Captain Proton. Chapter 18, Bride of Chaotica. The evil Dr. Chaotica kidnaps Constance Goodhart and plans to sacrifice her to Arachnia, Queen of the Spider People.
Captain Proton travels millions of miles to Planet X, where he will invade the Fortress of Doom. Chaotica fires his fiendish death ray. Certain death for Proton as his rocket ship bursts into flame!
Star Trek is littered with episodes featuring the holodeck, and one of the more interesting holodeck programs on Voyager was Fairhaven. Captain Proton. And today we're going to talk about Captain Proton. And of course, I still have with me, carrying over from news, the groom of Chaotica, Greg Harbin.
Yes.
And joining us for the first time on the Ready Room is Trek FM's Voyager book reviewer, Matthew Rushing. Hello, Matthew.
I am Satan's robot. I am glad to be here.
Nice.
Oh, I love Satan's robot.
The best robot ever.
And also joining us, our managing editor, our Voyager editor, and one of Queen Arachnia's minions. It is Mistress Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Char.
Hello.
So we decided to pick a fun episode of Voyager, which I think Greg is scratching his head a little bit at this choice.
This is what you call fun. I don't quite, but okay.
Greg.
All right, I'll allow it for now.
Greg.
We're going to talk about Bride of Chaotica, yeah. Which, as you know, I love because it's one of only two episodes in all of Star Trek to feature an exclamation mark.
And Netflix takes off the exclamation mark.
Yeah.
On Gosh. When you go to Netflix and you search for it, it's just Bride of Chaotica. Yeah, whatever.
Boring.
It's whatever, yeah, you know. Whatever.
It's like the exclamation mark is the whole reason I want to watch this episode.
Yeah. Don't take yeah, it. Yeah, seriously.
They're gonna redub the whole thing too. They're gonna have Chaotica like, yeah, get the yeah. death ray. Whatever. Yeah, I'll lower my lightning shield. Whatever.
Depressant version, I guess.
Everyone sounds like Debbie right. Downer. You know, just
right.
Wah, wah. Yeah.
I guess this is my ray gun.
I will stun
I
you.
I mean,
now.
Phaser. Yeah. I mean, Boom. Imager. I don't know what. I don't know. Why are we doing this episode?
Is it time for a break yet?
Yeah. Somebody give me some damn coffee.
Oh, wait. That was in the episode.
That was.
But it was much better than that.
Yeah. There was no passion there, though.
No.
So that's
no.
what happens.
Yeah. I've seen that lady at Starbucks before. She just walks up and says, listen, I'm just going to say this once. Coffee, now.
Yes.
It's like, okay, yeah. Janeway. All right, yeah. all right, yeah. all right, Kathy. Yeah. We'll get you that
yeah.
coffee.
But that's what happens when you take out the exclamation point. You know, it's just like, you right. know, can I get my damn coffee, please?
Yeah, it's what...
Why did she need coffee so much? Had she been like up late doing reports? Was it crew evaluation time again? Did they need to pass Kim up for promotion and she just didn't yeah. want to do it again?
Oh, probably, but then she's also just such an addict. It's all she drinks ever.
Yeah, exactly. She's going through withdrawals.
It's 7:15 a.m. and she hasn't had any coffee yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a problem.
Yeah, let's not forget, she could have been stood up by Coco last night, too. We don't know.
Oh, this is true. Yeah. He might have passed up an invitation for dinner or something, so she's a little bit pissy about that.
Mm, yeah.
And
well, it was pretty frosty yeah. between them on the bridge. I mean, she just kind of ignored him at the engineering station and just gave him some paperwork, some busy work to do. And
yeah.
So, yeah. There seemed to be some sexual tension there.
Yeah, maybe things just aren't going so well between Kathy and Coco. That we could have stumbled upon the actual reason that this episode exists.
Maybe so, because meanwhile, like, while Coco is taking over the bridge and doing all the boring crap work, she's off in the holodeck playing a character. She's having fun.
Yeah, Kate Mulgrew's playing a character for one of the first times on yeah. the show.
And she's not... in a Victorian era novel.
Thank God.
Playing yes. a mistress, or I'm sorry, a nanny, you know, that just looks longingly at her master, waiting for him just to gaze in her direction.
Her master?
So. Yeah, a mistress I'd love
yes.
to see.
Yes. Well, oh, she did play the mistress in what was it?
Minions of America.
Resolutions, or what was that one where... She's on the planet and she's with the guy, and he tells her she should act like a whore, and she does it. You know,
oh, that's Resistance.
The one where you really Resistance.
She goes undercover
thank you.
As a prostitute to seduce one of the guards.
Exactly. Yeah. So she has played that part before. So
I see.
She knows how to do
this
it.
Time. Yeah. Exactly.
Jamie knows how to play.
I wasn't sure. For a minute there, you said on the planet, I was first thinking about resolutions and thinking, oh, did the monkey tell her to do that?
She's got the chastity belt on there, and she's not a whore.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And the second one I was thinking of was Prime Factors with the weird French alien guy. And I was thinking, well, her response to him there was to bake him a pecan pie.
Yeah.
That's
Well, you can tell that things aren't going well with Coco because she ends up playing a sexed up villain with lace in this episode. And she's ready.
Repressed sexual tension.
All right. Well, why don't we get into the actual episode here?
What?
And now, I think Greg sent us on the iMessages the, I hope you guys have something to talk about because I just don't know. This is an episode that just kind of happened for
well, I remember
me,
it,
I think. But
I remember it when I was a kid. And, you know, I looked forward to seeing, you know, space adventures every week. And, you know, what alien are they going to meet? What spatial anomaly? And then every once in a while, there would be these Captain Proton things. I believe it started with the season 5 premiere where we saw Captain Proton and Buster Kincaid.
Right, and Knight, yeah.
Knight, yes. I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting. And then it just keeps going. And it was to the point, maybe not by this point, but there was a point at which I was just like, really? Another Captain Proton episode? Or what, are we going to do the Captain Proton movie next? And just going to set the whole thing in the holodeck? And it's not that I have a huge problem with it. It's just you guys are really going to have to sell me on this episode. Tell me on why it's classic Voyager.
Well, I don't know if it's classic Voyager or not, but I grew up watching Lost in Space in black and white, Flash Gordon, these types of shows. So for me, I really like the fact that Star Trek is in a way paying homage to the type of serials that ultimately led to Star Trek itself. You know, it's this classic science fiction that eventually led us to shows like Star Trek. And they do it so well. I mean, Robbie Duncan McNeil is amazing in this episode for me. Even Garrett Wong is really good in this episode.
Who knew?
And Kate Mulgrew is brilliant. I mean,
well, I think
the way she plays Queen Arachnia, the whole kind of the cheesiness of that classic sci-fi comes through
they nail
here,
it.
And they do it so well.
Well, and Garrett Wong just really, I think, nailing that whole Lucas form of acting, which is faster and more intense. And his kind of acting style just kind of fits in this campy world much better than it ever did in the real Star Trek world.
I agree.
That's true. I did like the very beginning of the episode where it's Paris and Kim and they're just going for it. They're just doing Captain Proton. There's ray guns and all this stuff. I kind of wish the whole episode had just been Captain Proton.
That would have been fun.
Like, I was kind of dreading when we found out what the lame sci-fi plot device is that they're going to bring in.
Yeah.
That's the point at which every time that happens, like, oh, really? Are we really going to talk about a subspace Eddie? Photonic life forms.
Life forms. You tiny little life forms.
Okay. But the stuff with Proton and Buster, that's phenomenal. And yes, Flash Gordon, it's great. It's funny. It's exciting. That I have no problem with.
Yeah, I can see that a little bit. I was thinking that, you know, Voyager is the master of creating convoluted reasons that problems are happening on the ship and creating convoluted technological solutions to these problems. And it almost did feel like, why don't we just go in and let's just do a Captain Proton episode and let's not worry about having the ship in danger because they fell into a part of subspace, which we talked about in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Right.
What does that mean? I mean, they're using subspace to communicate. Aren't we all maybe? I don't know. It's just, what's happening? Oh, we're caught in subspace. Well, now the ship's going to be destroyed unless we can defeat Chaotica, or as I call him, Doofenshmirtz. Because Chaotica, Doofenshmirtz and Chaotica are the same guy, I'm telling you.
Anyway, today is the day we reveal to the tri-state area the existence of the League of Villainous Evildoers maniacally united for frightening investments in naughtiness.
You want us to be called Love Muffin?
Sounds about right.
Go watch Phineas and Ferb.
All right. And then we've got these photonic life forms, which they're holographic life forms. So what, do they carry on around their own mobile emitter?
They do. They do. Now, you realize you thought that these aliens, they just came into the episode from The Big Goodbye, because I'm sure that's programmed into all Starfleet vessels.
It's got to be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Actually, the hats they were wearing, those were mobile emitters.
I see.
I think it was interesting. I mean, they obviously only come onto the ship in the holodeck, and so that was very interesting. But it did make me wonder, like Greg, how in the world do these aliens exist? If, you know, photonic life form is just light, and so without any other kind of substance,
right?
It doesn't really, I mean, you can't really dig into that too much, otherwise it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Right, so like in this subspace sandbar, like do these guys ever become corporeal? Okay, not corporeal, like photorial? Like do they eat together? Do they have like picnics? Is there anything they do together in this sandbar, or are they just waiting for ships to pass in so they can hang out in the holodeck for a little while and wear their fancy pinstripe
suits? Actually, that's where Fairhaven is, and they actually left that program in the databanks just as a gift to Captain Proton. They were really excited, and so they left him Fairhaven. Paris found it, and then of course that's where we get all those great episodes, and so we really have these aliens to thank for Fairhaven.
Oh, goody. Thanks a lot, jerks.
Their actual existence is an Irish village, is what you're saying.
Yeah, which is really weird. So
Greg, I think you just said a moment ago, if you think too much about this, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But it does make you question, well, what is life? How is life as we know it compared to these guys, which we really don't learn a whole lot about? Who's to say it can't happen?
Right. That's, for me, the if you want to find some philosophical question in this episode, that's the one, which is, what is life? The aliens say all life is photonic, and Tuvok says, we are not. We are biochemical life forms. And they say, I'm not familiar with biochemical.
Well, I'm looking forward to the episode where, you know, they're playing three-dimensional chess, and the three-dimensional chess player aliens appear, and they're saying, well, no. All life is three-dimensional chess pieces. You're the ones who aren't real. And then Jadzia is playing Tongo on DS9, and suddenly the Tongo chip aliens appear, and they say, no, Tongo chips, that's what life really
is. Right. I mean, you know, there's the classic, Edward Abbott wrote the classic novel Flatland about two-dimensional life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we also see there's a hypothesis right now. It's a very interesting one. It's called the simulation hypothesis in real life. And it sounds ridiculous, but the simulation hypothesis proposes that we actually are a computer simulation running in a computer of some other life form somewhere else in the universe, which, of course, it's not very likely, right. But there actually is a professor, it's Nick Bostrom, he talks about it, and he actually guesses that maybe there's a 20% chance that this could actually be true. And you don't know. I mean, it seems like it's not likely to us, but how would we know?
That's just
that
it.
We were not.
We wouldn't
simulation?
Really know.
Right.
It's like we could all be a part of some massive scheme a la Truman Show or something like that with these weird aliens.
Truman Show.
I just want to know, how did he come up with 20%? That exact number?
Well, it's actually... No, he actually says that the number is very subjective. It's
I was just wondering about that.
It's
part.
His personal, his personal feeling is that. But of course, it's not like he did calculations and came to that number.
Okay, because that would be really weird.
So like all good statistics, that 87% of them are just made up on the spot.
There you go.
Exactly.
Right.
Boom.
That moment, that number, exactly.
But I think it's interesting because we see in Star Trek, we have unusual life forms. You know, like the Tholians are a crystalline-based life form. Of course, we have the energy being of the week that pops up all the time, especially on The Next Generation. You've got the Horta. You've got a lot of unusual. I mean, Odo himself is a kind of liquid.
Right.
Who is able to take the shape of whatever he wants.
It's a little ridiculous, really, for them to say, you know, that photonic-based life forms can't exist because of all the things we have seen. I mean, even all the way back in Enterprise, they meet these energy-based life forms that don't exist. You know, there's the wormhole aliens on DS9. There's plenty of beings that can exist outside of it, and we're just exploring another facet of what life could be.
It really reminded me of the motion picture when they're talking to V'ger and it cannot understand that carbon-based life forms are real life forms, you know, in the same way that, I mean, they even say the same kind of thing to them as the, you're not photonic, you're not real. You know, so the idea of what's real and what's not real is really based on your perspective, as Obi-Wan Kenobi would say. It's all from your point of view. And so I just thought that was really interesting because Star Trek has kind of hit that before over and over again with its idea of, do we really understand what life is, and are we the only life, and how are we to say that something isn't life? And so I that idea of protection of life at all costs, no matter what it is, or is I think a really good thing that Star Trek brings. And so,
and here they're able to actually bring that into it's just a fun romp, which this episode is. They still slip that message in, even in this situation.
Yeah.
So that's our serious point about Bride of Chaotica.
All right, let's cut loose now.
So moving on, why don't we, I mentioned it in the intro, but an interesting point about this episode is the whole genesis of the episode in the first place and how they came to create an entire episode around Captain Proton. And that, of course, is the fact that there was a bridge fire, or there was a fire that damaged the bridge set. And they kind of had to figure out a way to do an episode that didn't require very much on the bridge. And then they were able to shoot those bridge scenes sometime after they shot everything else.
Which you know, sometimes you can do just a regular episode that just doesn't happen to touch on the bridge. I mean, the bridge isn't that important a place unless you're dealing with other ships. So you could have a story that takes place mostly in engineering or, you know, in the Jefferies tubes. You're just searching for Argyle. There's lots of things you can do that don't involve the bridge. But they really did go out of their way to do just a really big episode that just didn't involve the bridge. Well, although there are a couple bridge scenes, which I guess they ended up shooting those weeks later.
Yeah, they shot them quite a bit later.
While shooting other episodes after they'd already repaired the bridge. But they wanted to make sure there was as little as possible there, so they didn't have to worry about it too much.
Well, and at this point, they had created the Astrometrics Lab, and I mean, so which was a brand new set for them, and it was really big and very cool, and so you didn't need the bridge as much anyway in this episode. So it works really well, actually.
Which, by the way, I really want to hook my PlayStation up in Astrometrics and play Burnout Paradise, because that would be really kick-ass.
Yeah.
Or just some Lego Star Wars, you know.
All right. That's three Star Wars references, Matthew. I think we're done. This is Star Trek. This is Trek FM. We don't talk about Star Wars on Trek FM.
No, not. You have to go to that other. You have to go to the other side of the bridge to the observation lounge to get that kind of
action.
That's right.
Oh, I think the only reason
that's one plug.
There you go.
There's one plug. Yes, there will be more to come.
Yeah. There is one reason, I think, to have any bridge scenes whatsoever in this episode, and that was to give Robert Beltran something to do. Because, well, just about everybody is on the holodeck solving this problem, having fun, no less, while they're at it. He gets plunked on the bridge to give the same old dialogue as he always does. Blah, 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 blah. Boring.
I mean, he didn't even get the fun job that Neelix got, which was to create a bathroom schedule for the crew.
Right. Yeah,
well,
even Neelix.
Only Neelix can be trusted with that. I mean, that is not a job for Chakotay. He would totally screw that up.
He'd probably destroy the lavatories that were left if it's anything like his shuttle record.
Or he'd just make everybody go through some sort of weird Indian ritual to get clean and be like, you don't need a sonic shower. You just went through the ritual. You're fine.
Your animal guide will take care of it for you. Just here, put your hand on this
He just
stone.
Goes up and down the bathroom lines, introducing people to their animal guide.
What about the smell, Chakotay? But what about the smell?
Hakuchi Moya.
Why do I get the feeling that Tuvok's solution to all this would involve some kind of space enemas?
Oh my god. What?
I just
what?
Picture... Wow. Because Vulcan, you know, they're vegetarian. He's always meditating in his quarters with the candles. And so, I don't know. It just
Chris.
Would he make them play with the blocks? I mean, I don't understand.
We were talking about enemas? How did we get to this? Chris.
Yeah. I don't know how we got to space enemas.
But Greg is intrigued.
Is this some Vulcan ritual we don't know about?
I am pretty sure that Tuvok would develop a complicated PowerPoint presentation to explain the exact schedule of how people would go to the bathroom. You know, E-Deck gets to go, you know, from 1 to 2 p.m.,
et cetera. And their enemas, apparently.
Transitions and all.
I just can't believe you brought that up, Chris. Wow, I'm impressed.
But regardless of whoever gets to go to the bathroom when in this scenario, I have to say that, you know, to come up with an episode to deal with the fact that they can't shoot on the bridge, the set design in this episode is absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah.
The whole Captain Proton, the ship, the Fortress of Doom, all of it is just, even the caves, which I love the fact that they actually have an inside joke making fun of the fact that they're always shooting
yes.
You know, here on Planet Hill. Just and even the shots. I actually thought when Satan's robot and Tom and Harry are Or is it, I think it's Tom and Harry at that point, or Tom and Tuvok, when they're walking and they do the overhead shot and you see down and it's like R2-D2 and C-3PO going through on Tatooine before the Jawas jump out.
Oh, another Star Wars reference. There you go,
But of course,
Greg.
We never would talk about Star Wars on Trek FM.
No.
Damn it,
only in the Observation Lounge, Chris. Only in the Observation Lounge. This is the ready room. Get it right.
It's time for Star Wars to take a barrel roll out of this podcast.
There we go.
Boom. Okay.
That's right. This is the other side of the bridge. Okay.
It's, yeah.
Right.
Attention.
But no, I love the choice to go black and white here. You know, we saw them go black and white briefly at the beginning of Voyager in Ex Post Facto. And I know they wanted to do that entire episode in black and white, which I think would have actually made it a much better episode. I'm glad that they went all black and white here, though. And the purple, the little bit of purple splash that comes in here and there when the photonic aliens come in, it looks beautiful against the black and white. I also think it's a very creative visual device to indicate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
To separate the photonic aliens from Chaotica's army of evil.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I thought it would have been really cool for them to do a black and white opening title sequence.
Yes,
that would have been
just,
cool.
And not just turn the opening title sequence black and white, but just shoot a whole new one that looks like it's shot, you know, like with the Voyager on a string just being carried past
camera.
That would have been awesome.
And sort of planets. You sort of see the planets waving back
shooting
and forth.
Shooting its ray guns.
There's like a fan going in the studio.
Yeah, or if they had just gone with the whole like Captain Proton opening and cut out the Voyager one completely.
Oh, that
would have
been
excellent. You know, you could have had Tom Paris as, you know, Captain Proton.
Yeah, and he would be first in the credits.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, he would
be. Or they could have done, it's the same Voyager sequence, but it's black and white, but instead of Voyager, it's Captain Proton's rocket ship.
Nice. Excellent.
Going through the
with
Delta
the music.
On the little
awesome.
String bouncing up and
on
down.
On the string.
Yeah, with the Captain Proton music, though.
And the planets, they're styrofoam planets from a science fair project.
Awesome.
Oh,
awesome.
So good.
Right.
Oh, that would have been beautiful.
That would have been awesome.
Well, and actually, you know what? I think a lot of what they did here really was just spot on. The black and white, the sets you already mentioned, but then also the costuming too, I thought was just absolutely fantastic. The attention to detail, especially for Arachnia, with like the weird nails. If you look mm-hmm. close up, she's got some funky extensions on her nails going. They really went all out for this one, and I'm surprised that this didn't win anybody any awards or anything, because I just totally thought
it should have.
Yeah, I thought it really.
It should have won an Emmy for costume design. Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought they really, really sold it.
Mm-hmm. When you first see her in her costume, too, I mean, you know, all I could think of was the, you know, Tom had mentioned her pheromones, and I was like, yeah, she looks really good in this episode.
She's in there and she is strutting her stuff. She's got that swag.
One thing I was thinking in costume design here too was Lonzak, who's, you know, Chaotica's sidekick, mm-hmm. henchman.
Yes.
Did you mm-hmm. see? Did you see the shoulders on his?
Oh yeah.
Costume.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
Think how many admirals would kill to have those shoulder pads on their
or Romulans.
But especially the admirals, because, you know, they're really into shoulder pads.
They are.
And, you know, the Starfleet Fashion School. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, watch for that trend coming soon.
Yeah, as soon as they get their hands on that, Starfleet Fashion Design School is going to be really busy.
Yeah. But even, like, Constance Goodhart's hair, even, was just spot on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Every little thing.
And her, the way that she screams at everything was just, yes. And it's really long and really loud in the mix, and it's so funny.
Yes, and is that not all that she does the entire time? Like, that's her only, quote-unquote, line?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, she screams a few times and then
she
dies.
She does other things in the episode, but, you know, Tom didn't get to save her quick enough, because Harry mentions, I thought there were slave girls in this episode. You know, you notice this is why Harry's in this, because this is the only place that he gets some action, is the slave girls he's about to rescue.
And here's the thing, okay, and I mentioned this to Chris on iMessage, even with slave girls, I still don't think Harry would have gotten laid. He would have found some way to screw it up. You know he would have.
Yeah. He would have said, look, I love your slave outfit, you know, but it's not you, it's not you, yeah. It's me.
Yeah. I still love Libby.
I'm from another universe. I'm not actually a holographic character.
Right, of course, he'd be the one guy that would let that get in the way. It's like, I'm sorry, you're photonic, I'm organic. This isn't going to work out. I understand that physically it can happen, but I wouldn't feel comfortable.
Exactly.
Let's just be friends.
You're just from the wrong side of technology, and I just...
And you already slept with Tom, and that's a problem.
Oh, Harry.
I can't mentally get over that. Right.
You know, technically, if you think of the holodeck as being a character on the show, because, you know, the holodeck computer is creating all these characters, and you realize the holodeck has slept with pretty much the entire crew at this point.
Absolutely.
The holodeck's getting more action than anyone else on the ship.
It's making Riker look bad. You know,
seriously, because you gotta wonder, are diseases transmittable through the holodeck? Like, does it have space herpes or something?
Oh God, I hope not. I hope it just cleanses
itself. Does it have a biofilter?
Like, you know, holodeck off, and it goes zoop, and then it just fills the whole room with like a mm-hmm. terrible gas that just
eliminates
everything.
You just give a little bit of biomimetic gel. It's the equivalent of of penicillin. That gets squirted everywhere, and it washes itself up with these really nice scrubber bubble things. It looks really good when it's done, but when you walk in while that's happening, the holodeck gets really upset.
Because the holodeck doesn't want you to know about its problems. It needs that special cream and medication like once every 6 weeks.
I'm having a breakout. Go away.
Just leave me alone.
Can I just get some alone time, please?
Yeah. Or it's like that someone's making the access code to load a program. Just a moment.
Oh, man.
Now's not a good time,
right? I'm ready for you, buddy.
Can you go to Holodeck 3, please? I'm a little bit busy.
Riker's hanging out in 10 forward with a drink. He looks really sad. Like, Will, what's going on? Okay, you know, the holodeck is still recovering. It's going to be like 4 more days before I can get in there again. Oh, man.
Do you know how long it takes to scrub down after I'm in there?
Right. Well, and here's the sad thing is, I mean, you know, our computers get computer viruses. You have to think over the Starfleet Interstellar Network. This is going all over the place. Every computer, everywhere, is infected with Riker's herpes.
And you know they're thinking about the Intrepid class, and they're like, you know, I don't think that equipping the ship with the gel packs was such a good idea. Should we really be putting biology throughout the ship?
Yeah.
Knowing what happens to the holodeck.
They can't handle cheese, much less anything else. Man. Ooh, that's bad. No wonder B'Elanna is always so busy.
Poor Voyager. Yeah.
That's true.
No wonder she hated Tom for all those years.
Yeah. No kidding, right? Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we mentioned Arachnia Chaotica here a little bit. One thing I did want to talk about was just the guest casting in this episode, because, you know, I thought that Martin Rayner as Chaotica was one of the best guest roles on Star Trek. I mean, of course, it would fit. It was supposed to be this campy classic sci-fi mold here, but he was just fantastic, I thought, as Chaotica.
Oh, yeah. He nails it. Totally believable. Loved watching him. It's fun. And, of course, he and Kate Mulgrew are just, man, the energy. Just watching them is such fun. I can't really think of the best way to describe it right now, except it's just a real treat to watch it. You can tell they're having fun on set, and it comes through in their performance. They're giving 100%. Mm-hmm. It's so lively.
Oh, yeah.
The holodeck is the other side of the room for the Voyager cast. And so you can feel that they're really just letting go.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun to watch this episode, because they're coming in and it's like, okay, the stakes are only the ship's going to explode if we don't fix this. So it's not like a planet of millions. And so the whole crew, it just seems like, is having a much better time filming just something that's silly and isn't life-changing. It's just to be a good time. Yeah. And hey, you can be a little bit more campy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, often you feel like they're not really cluing in to how serious the stakes are, or sometimes the stakes just aren't there at all, just because it's so ridiculous. This time I felt like, yeah, you're right. They hit a good point of there's this weird subspace eddy that they're stuck in, and if they stay there, they're obviously never going to get out. So they have to fix this. But the only way to fix it is to have some fun.
Exactly.
And I feel like that's perfect. I don't know what the Voyager, you know, the next week on Voyager, but I'd love for it to be like, Voyager is stuck in a subspace eddy, and the only way to save the ship is for Captain Janeway to let loose and put on a dress and have some fun. Star Trek Voyager.
Awesome.
Janeway goes goth.
Yeah. That would have been sweet. The promo people really needed to get on that.
Yes.
Well, oh, it was you.
I do remember they had some fun with the promos for the Captain Proton episodes. They let you know it's going to be Captain Proton. You're going to have some fun.
Well, that's good
week.
Because I was thinking when at the beginning of this episode, when Harry and Tom are watching the recap from the last one, and they say, and then the ship burst into flames on the last episode, and Harry says, our ship didn't burst into flames.
Yeah.
Why are these recaps always so misleading? And I thought that itself was...
You know they were doing
talking about UPN's promos for Voyager, which typically had nothing to do with the actual plot of the episode.
Yes, thank you. Oh my gosh, those things are so incredibly misleading. They have 90% of the time nothing at all to do with the actual episode itself. They want you to completely believe that the episode's going to be about something that it's not.
Which,
right.
Captain Janeway goes berserk and believes that she is the bride of Chaotica.
Captain Janeway wants her coffee and she wants it now. What happens to Neelix on Star Trek Voyager?
Exactly.
Can Tom Paris and Harry Kim save the ship from a deranged Captain Janeway?
That's what the promo guys would do. It's, those things frustrated
me to
no
end. Will Coco get more than 5 lines today?
No.
On Star Trek Voyager.
Just
on the next Star Trek Voyager. Can Obi-Wan shut down the deflectors in time for the Millennium Falcon to escape the grip of Lord Chaotica?
It is your destiny.
Enough of the damn Star Wars references! Seriously!
All they have to do is announce a Star Wars movie, and suddenly everyone comes out of the woodwork. You don't hear about Star Wars for 10 years, and suddenly everyone is making references to Yoda and the Kyber crystal.
Oh, goodness. They have to get those Fortress of Doom plans back to the Rebel base before the Death Ray becomes operational on the next Star Trek Voyager.
On the next Star Trek Voyager, can Neelix figure out what the bathroom schedule is going to be? It's life or death.
I give up. I just give up.
The astrometric screen goes down and Tuvok can't work on his PowerPoints. On the next Star Trek
Guys,
Voyager.
Guys, this is Voyager Season 8 Twitter fodder.
Seven unplugs Harry's Xbox from Astrometrics.
Harry throws a tantrum and goes to Janeway for advice. Wait a minute, that happens, doesn't it?
Seven won't let me play Xbox.
Yeah. She unplugged it and she won't give it back.
Oh man, that's
okay, are we done?
I think so.
Wow, oh my you guys. Goodness. Well, wow.
All right. The sad part is that all of that started because it's actually kind of true.
That's just the thing. It is yes, so true. It is. Damn them.
Yeah, I'd get so excited about what was going to happen on the next week because the promo would be some amazing thing. And it's not like the next episode wasn't good. It just... Never was what they promised.
And yet, they managed to mash up footage from the episode to make it look like that was what was really going to happen. Expert talent.
Yes.
Jerks.
They do that on so many... Yeah, they do that on so many shows. And UPN was one of the worst at it. It really started that, and then, you know, the CW has just carried that on. And so, it's terrible.
I blame the wrestling. I think that's where it stems from.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Sunday.
And this was the time.
Sunday.
Exactly.
Well, this was the time when UPN was shifting itself into this wrestling mode and top model mode.
Mm-hmm. See?
And yeah, it bleeds through on Voyager. All right. Well, why don't we recover a little bit here, sort of.
Can we?
By talking about Satan's robot, which I have to say is the best robot ever. And I grew up watching the robot from Lost in Space, Danger, Will Robinson. But this, I love the design of this robot, and I love the way that it walks.
Oh, it's sweet.
So take that, top model.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's like some blind guy. He's really kind of wobbling all over the place. He looks like he could fall apart at any second, but he's a robot.
But the best part is that he does look like he could fall apart any second, and he's very top-heavy, but yet he goes to the controls, and he works the controls right along with Captain Proton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with robotic precision.
Do those hands, like, change? Like, are they interchangeable, like Lego hands, you know? You can pull them out and put in another one?
Yeah, maybe.
Like Porthos's tail.
Exactly.
Right. Are you guys on board with me now? I have this project I want to work on. I want to remaster the next generation. And what I want to do is I want to replace Data with Satan's robot. So every time Data appears in the next generation, it will be Satan's robot now.
I'm all for it.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that'll work just fine because he has a lot of volume, so we can just paste him on top.
Good point.
And he'll just cover him. Sort of like the Ronto in the Star Wars Special Editions. He just covers up stuff
exactly
really easily.
And then he's going to walk by every time right in front of the camera when the biggest action is happening. Satan's robot.
He'll just walk by. Yeah.
There's Satan's robot again.
You know, one scene you can definitely look forward to is my remastering of Data's Day. The Dr. Crusher Data tap dancing lesson is going to be really spectacular with Satan's robot.
Oh, that'll be sweet, watching him wobble with a big smile.
Well, I was kind of looking forward to him bending down and trying to... No, that's not him. Never mind. I was going to deliver the baby, you know, with those big claw hands.
Oh, no, that's Worf.
That would be fun. Yeah, but it would be funny if we replaced Worf then in that episode just because those claw hands trying to deliver a baby, you know.
Why not? Yeah.
Well, here's the weird thing. Spot actually likes Satan's robot a lot more than he ever liked Brent
Go
Spiner,
figure.
Data. So there's a lot more like loving family in the remastered version.
Yeah. I wonder why that is.
Chris, I'm with you. I feel like Satan's robot just needed its own show. Like,
yeah,
I wanted to know his backstory. I wanted to know, you know, what was his motivation for working for Chaotica.
Can he do the show with the monkey from Resolutions?
Exactly. Can they just get their own show together?
I think I'm finding some real synergy here.
Yeah, the new bosom buddies.
Oh my god, I hear a Photoshop calling.
Satan's robot and Lieutenant Monkey.
The monkey and Satan's robot.
Yeah. And also, Greg, just for you, because I know you love this one. I'm going to redo Pen Pals. It's going to be Satan's robot who becomes Pen Pals with Shia LaBeouf.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Win!
Perfect.
Wait. I thought Satan's robot was going to be in the remake of Boy Meets World.
Oh, he's going to be in that, too. The guy is everywhere now. He's really popular.
Yeah. Yeah. His career's taken off.
He's kind of like the Jeffrey Combs of 1930s sci-fi.
Yeah.
There we go. I can see him as an Andorian. Just put some antenna on there, color him blue. You can't really tell. It's black and white. Maybe he's blue already.
Spray paint him blue.
Awesome.
And then he can be in all of our Andorian fight scenes that we're going to splice into every episode of the original series.
Yeah, he'll fit right in.
That would be excellent, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this will be so good.
Okay, but... I love Satan's robot.
I really liked that scene where Tuvok and Paris are walking and they find Satan's robot and Paris starts working on him and he's taking all these things out. And there's just that little moment where Tuvok says, "Your knowledge of this technology is impressive." And Tom's like, "Thanks." It's just so funny that, you know, Tom knows all this stuff about something that doesn't matter whatsoever, and Tuvok's impressed by it.
Right. To contrast that, yeah. I really loved it when Tom is explaining to Janeway in the ready room all that's going on with this, and he's telling her this stuff. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. This is, you know, Proton is going to try and take over the universe. Uh-huh. And then Arachnia, that you know, he's been trying to get her to be his bride for the longest time. Oh, really? Well, that's nice. And guess who I want to play? Arachnia. Seven?
Yeah. Uh-uh. Yeah, she looks over at Seven.
She does. And then Robbie Duncan McNeil just nails this scene. He looks at her. No.
Yeah.
You. And she's just, what? No. I'm a size 4.
That was the best.
Yes, exactly. She acquiesces
really quite easily.
My favorite line in that scene, though, is when she says, "Let me get this straight. Transdimensional aliens have mistaken your Captain Proton simulation for reality."
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And Tom's like, "Yes, ma'am." And now an armed conflict has broken out between the aliens and Captain Proton's holographic army. And then Tom says, "Yes, ma'am. His army of evil."
Yeah.
Robbie's delivery of that line, so deadpan,
it's perfect.
So perfect. Yes.
What I loved about that scene is it's the way I feel whenever I try to explain a different show to someone who's maybe a fan of Star Trek. It's like, okay, and then, you know, they've got faster than light, it's like an FDL drive, and then they launch these little ships, and there's a ship-to-ship battle, and there's these Cylons who look like humans, but they can breed with humans. There's sort of a red thing that goes up and down their back, and people just give me this blank look on their face.
Like, that's exactly what this is like when you're talking about Star Trek to somebody who has no idea what the show is. This is a reflection of that, and I just love it so much. And I would have been remiss if I hadn't mentioned Robbie Duncan McNeil. My Delta Angels would have killed me.
They would have, yeah. And talking about commentary on Star Trek, I mean, even when they're in the turbo lift, and he's saying, "Remember, it's ray gun." Not phaser.
Right.
Yes. It's imagizer, not view screen. And it's Earthlings, not Terrans. And even that's, like you're saying, to someone who's not into Star Trek, to us, all this stuff sounds silly. Oh, no, of course it's a view screen. Of course it's a phaser. But no, this is how other people see
Star it's a
Trek.
Whole new language.
Exactly.
It's technobabble for real people.
Like, what is a quantum torpedo exactly?
Right. Yeah, it makes perfect sense to us. But it's technobabble to everybody else. and followed up with that beautiful line, "And remember, you're the queen," which is so incredibly cute.
Oh, God.
And again, I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to some of Trek FM's finest. No disrespect to you at all, Matt, but I really think that Colin and Lori should have been the guests for this show because they are Chaotica and Arachnia on Twitter. They have like this weird cosplay going. They do this, and it's really their roles. They should be here. So, hey, guys.
There's a great love affair happening right there before our eyes on Twitter, and yeah,
something's going on, man. Yeah.
I wanted to mention I loved Robbie in this episode specifically. I thought that he was the highlight for me, because everything he did was just deadpan and hilarious, and he does this little scene where Janeway's about sending Tuvok into the holodeck to check it out. And she looks at him and she goes, "Well, go with him." And he goes, "Yes, ma'am."
Yeah.
Like, "Yes, mama, baby." I remember baby mama, lizard mama. And it's just like, he's giving her this like, "Yes, ma'am." Like, there's so much there. And he just does it in like 2 seconds.
Right.
It's great. I love it.
We've got to mention Janeway's. I mean, I thought that was kind of like a really pushy line for her, just the way she says that. Like, Janeway's just really, she's got some kind of an attitude going on in this episode, don't you think?
Well, she didn't get her coffee.
Well, yeah, this is what I wanted to bring up. I mean, she had obviously been without coffee for like, what, 30, maybe 40 minutes? And it was having a drastic effect on her. And so, wow, that scene where she goes into the mess hall and tells Neelix, "Coffee, black." And he says, "Maybe I'm in the lavatory. I'm only going to say this once and once more. Coffee, black." And then has the coffee orgasm that he can't even watch. I mean, it's just so freaking awesome. I thought I was a caffeine addict. I've got nothing on Janeway.
No. She's like, "Neelix, you remember that time when that hawk plucked your eyeball out? Well, if I don't get my coffee within the next 10 seconds,
it's going to feel 10 times worse than that."
Absolutely.
Did you notice the Harry met Sally thing that happens right after she leaves? Neelix takes that cup and he drinks her coffee thinking, "I want what she's having."
Yeah, basically. Yes, I did notice.
Because if that just happened, I kind of want that to happen.
One thing I did want to say real quick about Robbie again, before we move on, is I really think that he should have been the star of the show. I think he was really wasted just being the pilot, being a lieutenant, junior grade, or whatever they made him.
Ensign in this episode.
Yeah, he had just gotten demoted.
Oh, that's right. He's demoted.
Before this.
Right. He's so good. I mean, I understand, given the way the character dynamic worked, they couldn't have made him first officer. But I love the way Enterprise has Trip, which is very much a Paris-like character, and they make him sort of the center of the show. They really could have done a lot more with Paris on Voyager, because, as you say, with that, "You're the queen," he knows exactly what he's doing in every scene. He's really phenomenal. And whenever they give him scenery to chew, he's on top of it.
Yeah.
Totally.
As we talked about when we did our Threshold show, the whole thing where he's acting his hearts out about the pizza.
Seriously,
I mean,
yes.
They gave him horrible material, but Robbie just literally acted his hearts out in that episode, and he saved that to make it, at least for me, a fairly watchable episode.
Again, it's entertaining in a completely different way, but it makes it, at least you want to know what's going to happen next, because he's passing it off the best that he possibly can. You tell you what, he's a heck of an actor and a heck of a producer now. I've been watching 666 Park Avenue, and he's directing some of these episodes. He's a producer. He's running the show, as he talked about with our interview with him a couple months ago on Colin's show. The dude's got talent, man. He knows what's going on. He's incredibly good at what he does.
Well, and I think one of the, just to say for him, it shows that even terrible material can be made semi-good by a great actor.
Mm-hmm.
And Robbie really showed that. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, yeah, with Threshold, and then taking something this silly and making it completely work for today's audience, you know, then and now, you know, rewatching the episode, it still works.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the way that he just makes it work. And so, yeah, I think that that really helps. And he's great in it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He's so much fun to watch in this. And so is everybody, really. I mean, Kate Mulgrew is going to town with Arachnia. She's totally got her swagger going. Even Garrett Wong is actually...
What?
He varies his voice, and the dude can't act when he's really
Garrett
into
Wong
it.
Was actually good in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, he was. Yeah. Well, and let's not forget the Doctor playing the President of Earth.
Perfect.
I mean, Robert Picardo is always great.
Well, he is. But
yeah.
He's phenomenal. And you couldn't have a Photonic Lifeform episode without bringing the Doctor in. So I'm glad they gave him the role. And I loved his line where, I forget who it was, but it's like, what are you going to be? You know, Emperor of the Galaxy? Nah, I decided to scale back my role a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm just president.
I think he's talking to Alana there.
I don't think he decided to scale it back. He was more like disappointed. He's like, well, you know, like it seems that in order for believability, I have to scale it back a little bit.
Yeah.
The Doctor has the biggest ego. Yes.
His big dreams, you know, command hologram. So he's there. He's thinking big.
Yeah. You know, why didn't they go other routes with that? You know, I like the whole emergency command hologram thing that they do with him on Voyager. What about like emergency chef hologram? Like if Neelix gets injured on an away mission that he should not have been on. How about emergency engineering hologram? He can pop in, you know, if B'Elanna's out of action.
That could have been useful at times.
Emergency masseuse hologram for in your quarters for those days when it's just been really rough.
But he is on call to give massages because we saw him do that with Janeway in an episode, Scientific Method.
Oh, yeah.
What about emergency spy hologram where they could splice him in on those scenes where he needs to pass useless information off to the Kazon?
Oh, God. And there's no explanation as to why that's happening.
Right. You just don't. It's like it came from another show almost, just spliced right in the middle.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
He's wearing the right clothing, but it doesn't fit into the story.
Yeah. We don't know what's going on.
Do you think the Doctor ever goes into the holodeck and creates a girlfriend for himself?
He
and if so, what sort of weird thing is that with the computer and but they're separate processes, but yet they're interacting?
Well, he did create that family, remember?
So it's just like being with yourself.
Yeah.
It is something like that. Yeah. Interesting. I need to write an article about the holodeck and sexual practices for Trek FM. So
No. Not an article. You and Char need to write some of your fan fiction about the Doctor being with himself on the holodeck.
Oh, we are so backlogged
on story ideas.
I'm thinking it's from the perspective of the holodeck. It's as the holodeck and the experiences it has over the seven years of Voyager.
Oh, God, I really hope I don't give them space herpes.
Oh, man. The things it has seen.
You know, sometimes it'll fall for a crewman, and then that crewman will be sent on an away mission and die. And then the holodeck has to deal with these emotions that it had built up for this crewman it had been in a relationship with. I think there's some real stuff. Talk about what is life. The holodeck could be the one life form we've been ignoring this whole time.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it gets to know everybody on the ship, just like everybody else, has fun, plays, gives it herpes,
it gets to know everyone on the ship better than everyone else does.
But then it worries me because if the Doctor's been in the holodeck with his girlfriend and then he comes out of the holodeck and into, you know, sick bay, and then he's working on me.
Like I said,
I'm a little bit worried about that. Mm-hmm. Is that sanitary?
Mm-hmm.
Because does Purell work on a photonic life form?
I don't know. These are the questions, Greg, that we need to write about.
These are the questions. Yeah. The non-canon novel will definitely answer these questions. So stay tuned.
Somebody get Larry Nemechek on Twitter right now.
Oh, all right. Okay, well, we're about to hit an hour, so I guess we should wrap up with our final thoughts. Anything that you want to touch on in this episode that we didn't touch on yet, and what's your final take? And of course, because we actually have had listeners who... We have a listener who is trying to create a whole equation to figure out what our ratings actually mean. So we need to keep feeding them material. So let's be sure that we actually do give some sort of rating to this episode.
Oh, wow. Good luck to you, whoever you are.
Well, so as I said, this is not my favorite episode of Voyager. It's not my most hated either. There's always like the direction it could have gone in. If it had been a completely Captain Proton episode, that would have been really fun and really cool. I don't mind the photonic aliens even. It's mainly when they leave the holodeck and they're talking about eddies in the space in space time or whatever. And it's just, I don't know. It's a little silly for me. You know, I'm knee deep in DS9 right now and the beginning of season 7, and it's just all these emotions, these feels that I'm dealing with. And then to watch Voyager, it's like, this is just not what I'm feeling like Star Trek is for me right now. But Star Trek is a lot of different things. And sometimes Star Trek is just fun and letting the actors really just do whatever they want. And this is a great example of that. So there's a Bride of Chaotica mood that I'm sure I will be in. And I'll have to come back to it at that point. I guess I'll have to give the episode 7 out of 10 mobile emitter bowler hats. So you can put that into the
nice
equation.
Yeah, okay. Despite how silly the whole situation is that we get here with the subspace, blah, 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 techno babble, that's not terribly interesting. It's going to threaten the ship, yeah, but that's every week. So what? It's a great excuse for this fun romp, and it makes up for this silly plot device with entertainment value, and they nail it. The costumes, the sets, the acting, all just boom, in your face, and different. I just love the throwback stuff. This is something that you don't want to see all the time, because if they did it on a majorly regular basis, it would not have the same kind of effect. But they really went all out for this one and made the most of it and makes for a great 45 minutes. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm going to give it 9 pheromones.
It's a good rating. you know, I really liked this episode just in the same way Chris had talked about. It's a great homage to the 30s serials where so many great ideas have come from. You know, we talked about Star Wars or Indiana Jones. All of those are brought to us because people fell in love with those serials. And, you know, it's written by Brian Fuller, this episode. And he proves he can write camp really well. And he went on to write one of my favorite shows, Pushing Daisies. And so I think he really understood that you can have a lot of fun and it be okay. I thought it was interesting for me. I really buy some of the Voyager characters a lot more in this Captain Proton world than I ever do when they're actually on Voyager in their real life. Especially Harry Kim and, they seem to fit more in this campy world. Like Greg was talking about, there's a big difference between like the DS9 and then just Voyager, and it's the way it's written and comes across. But, it has this really deep question that it never really even answers, but it kind of throws it out there and you have to really be paying attention to get it. Okay, what is life? And something we didn't even talk about was that these aliens do what, they're the Starfleet of the photonic world. They're going out to seek out new life and new civilizations. And they're boldly going where no photon or whatever has gone before. And so I thought that was really interesting. So it gave you that kind of perspective of the other side of first contact, you know? And so that was really interesting. And then, you know, like all Voyager episodes, it's doesn't really have any impact. And so like Greg, you're just kind of like, oh, well that happened. And so I really love this episode though, because I can sit down and I can watch it and it's just plain fun. I don't have to worry about anything else. And so, I think that I will probably give it, 7 out of 10 Satan's robots.
That's a really good point about the fact that these photonic aliens are on their own mission to seek out and explore new worlds.
Yeah.
But overall for me, this episode, it's just great fun. I've always loved this episode since the first time it came on. I totally get how if you're watching the show for the usual Star Trek stuff, you might have the reaction that Greg had at first, like, oh, well, okay, that happened. What are we going to talk about in this situation? But I just like the fact that it's not taking itself seriously, but they still manage to slip that little bit of social commentary in there, as Star Trek always does. And, you know, the episode, it's definitely derivative. It's intentionally derivative of classic sci-fi, of course, but it's also derivative of many, many Star Trek episodes that came before it. And it's filled with the same, you know, convenient technological failures, the holodeck's not working, of course, you know, that we get all the time on Star Trek. And that's kind of annoying to me in a lot of situations. But in this case, I'm fine with it all because the episode is just so much fun, and it's not trying to be serious in any way. And so what if it's derivative? And so what if it's a, you know, technical problem that they have on the ship? It's just a really great, fun romp in classic sci-fi. So I love it. I think the cast was brilliant. The costume design was brilliant. Set design was brilliant. I'm going to give this episode an entire Army of Evil.
Nice.
Wow. Good luck figuring out what that means on the ranking scale.
Seriously.
You've got your work cut out for you this week. All right.
Yes.
So, I don't know. We always have our guests tell people where they can be found elsewhere. But, you know, we have an entire Trek FM cast today. So why don't we, because you won't be in the outro, Char, go ahead and tell everyone where they can find you online if they want to seek out your Arachnia minionness.
Yes, you can find me and all of my minions on Twitter. My username is Oh the Profanity. And of course, you can find me all over the place at Trek FM.
And how about you, Matthew?
Well, my name on Twitter is not so exciting. It's just Matt Rushing 02. I was going to run for office, but it just didn't work out. and then I do have my, actually I have my own blog. I just kind of blog it out, you know, and everything from Satan's Robot to more. It's 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. And then of course, I'm the book reviewer at Trek FM.
Great. And of course, everyone can hear you, along with Greg and me, on the first episode of The Observation Lounge as well, where we talk about, not that we would ever do this, but we did mention at least once Star Wars in that show.
Just a little.
It only came up once.
Just once, yeah, whatever.
Bride of Chaotica may not be my favorite episode of Voyager, but I think we managed to make a pretty good feature out of it, don't you think?
I think so. Perhaps only half of our feature was actually about the episode, but I really had fun discussing the holodeck with you and also, you know, giving ideas for possible promos. So, yeah, it was fun.
Very fun, yes.
But I'm glad we did talk about the episode, though, because I really think this shows what Voyager could have been. Not the Captain Proton part so much, but the way that the cast gelled with one another in this episode. And, you know, you do get that feeling sometimes, and you hear about it at conventions. You hear that it wasn't the happiest set to be on, and that the cast didn't quite have the connection with one another that the TNG cast did, especially. But here you feel like everyone was really having fun. Everybody was enjoying themselves shooting this episode. And I think it highlights the strengths of the cast in a way that we don't always get to see.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I was joking about Captain Proton film, but I actually wouldn't mind have seen one or two more Captain Proton episodes. It's a fun diversion to go on. It's just not always the mood I'm particularly in. But yeah, it's great seeing the cast doing this. And just, you know, give Robbie Duncan McNeil a show. Just do the Tom Paris show, because he is so good every time.
He really is. He is fantastic. All right. Well, let's get everyone on out of here. I know the show's probably running long, as it always does. But I do want to give a plug real quick to Colin's show, Trek News and Views, and also our friends at the Sci-Fi Diner, Scott and Miles over at Sci-Fi Diner. Colin has been sick this week. He really did not have a voice, and Scott and Miles allowed us to use three interviews that they did for this week's Trek News and Views. And it's an interview that they did with LeVar Burton, an interview they did with John Delancey, and one with Dominic Keating. And it's great information. They're very candid interviews done at cons. And just go over to our site, trek.fm/TNV52 for that episode and catch that. And be sure to go over to the Sci-Fi Diner as well, scifidinerpodcast.com. Scott and Miles, they cover the whole world of sci-fi. It's not just Star Trek stuff. They do Star Trek on occasion. But just great information if you are a sci-fi nerd. You definitely should be checking them out. So, Greg, let's tell everyone where they can find us and share their thoughts on anything we talked about in news or Bride of Chaotica or any concerns they might have about going into the holodeck after having listened to today's show. Just go to trek.fm/contact. You'll find a form there. You can send a message actually to any show through that form. Just choose the show that you're sending it to. So if it's to us, make sure you choose the Ready Room. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And you can find us on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmgplus, on ADN under username trekfm, and of course on Twitter, where Greg, Char, Drew, and myself all tweet from the Trek FM account, and that is username Trek FM. And Greg, I think everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
Yes, definitely find me there at Greg Harbin. That's GREGHARB as in boy, IN. I hope everyone was following me around Moscow. Well, not physically, unless you're one of our listeners. Most of you, I hope you were simply following me on Twitter as I was there taking pictures, having fun, watching Star Trek V for some reason. But now I'm back, and I will be resuming my viewing of DS9, as well as I'm very much looking forward to the starting of the new Doctor Who season. So all this stuff, please talk with me on Twitter. It's always great to be caught in a Twitter snowball with all of you.
We do get caught in those, don't we? I wake up in the mornings. You know, I have my phone on do not disturb mode at night.
Yes.
And I wake up in the morning with, as far as Twitter goes, I'll have like 70 or 80 at replies. The little badge will have an 80 on it.
Wow.
I woke up this morning, my iMessage badge this morning said 139.
Well, that's because there's goodness. Like four or five group iMessages going on that you happen to be a part of.
Yes, the group iMessages are the ones that really snowball. Oh, man. But anyway, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I also want to remind everyone, Greg, to check out our new podcast. We talked about the Observation Lounge several times during the show today. What we didn't talk about, for some reason, having Char on the show, is our new Voyager podcast, To the Journey, which we launched this week. And Char is on there. She is a co-host along with Lori, also known as Queen Arachnia, and Tristan, who everyone knows as the international sex symbol, host of Trek FM's Hyperchannel video news show. And To the Journey, it's a really fun show. It's not an episode review show. It's not a long show. It's a 30-minute podcast devoted to Star Trek Voyager, and they just pick a topic about Voyager and talk about it. You know, I mean, it could be, we talked about Robbie Duncan McNeil a lot today. They might just talk about his acting on Voyager. They might talk about Janeway's coffee obsession. They might talk about what is a subspace eddy and why is Voyager caught in one so often. It's just random minutia from Voyager that's kind of a supplemental to the discussions that we have here on the Ready Room and on Trek News and Views about all the shows.
Yeah, I'm told next week's show they're going to be talking about Janeway's arms in the episode Macrocosm. So I'm very much looking forward to that. She's very buff. She's obviously been hitting the gym. So yes, I love hearing Tristan and Char and Lori talk about that.
That's going to be a great one for sure. So be sure, check that out. It's trek.fm/TTJ for To The Journey. You can find them on iTunes. You can find them on Stitcher, just like all of our other shows. And something you don't want to miss. All right, Greg. Well, it's time for me to get out of here. It's really important that I go right now and disable the lightning shield.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to spray some scrubbing bubbles on it. Because the ready room is done.
Bridge to Janeway.
Go ahead.
The aliens have retreated and they've closed the distortions. We've cleared the subspace layer.
Secure all systems and organize damage repair teams.
Understood. We're preparing to shut down the holodeck.
You have not seen the last of Chaotica.
Engage. Oh yes, I forgot to tell you. I will be talking like this for the entire show.
Dun dun dun.
I will be rolling my R's whenever possible.
And here we are this Saturday. Welcome.
Was that a 1930s baseball announcer?
Yes, it was.
He's rounding the corner. He's they're throwing him out at home. He's the Giants win the pennant. Giants win the pennant. That's how it goes, right?
Oh boy, Greg really gets into the sports ball.
Hey there, y'all.
I did.
Cubs win.
I'm not sure
what we're doing. I'm confused.
No idea.
It's Greg's fault. Sports ball.